the core differentiator between you and your competitors today, it is you. It is like the personality. It is the people. It is like the humanness of your company that cannot be replicated because everyone is unique. In the age of AI, the only differentiator is how you get your people to scale. How do you get that message to market to scale? And the only way to do that is by capturing the human.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan Gandolf, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus, the host of today's episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. I'm thrilled to be joined by a guest, a partner, a friend, a colleague, Rachel Else Downey, founder and CEO of Share Your Genius, where she's going to be sharing some of her genius today. We're going to talk all things podcasting, video, audio content, content strategy, maybe some hot takes intertwined. Rachel, to be fully transparent, is a partner of ours. She actually produces this very episode. So this is very meta here. Great partner. We love working together. And what they and their team do has really become core to our business. So excited to jump into all of that today. But Rachel, before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and share your genius in your own words?
Yeah, so the quick tea on who we are. Share Your Genius is a content and podcast production agency, and our mission is really to help you content smarter by leveraging your genius.
Love it. Short. You've done this before. Short and to the point. I appreciate that. I'm not going to let you off the hook on this one, though. This is the Content Cocktail Hour. We always start by asking all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
So I'm going to be super lame. I love a good cocktail, but lately I have been just opting for club soda with a lime. And it's working and it's serving me well right now.
Are you club soda brand loyal?
I mean, I might need to be. I literally am just like, club soda?
Yeah. That's fair. When I'm feeling bougie, it's not club soda, but like Topo Chico, right?
Is
like
I love a Topo water. Chico. Yeah, like, love a Topo Chico. You can get a case at Costco for like $20.
Twist of lime. It's perfect. So
yes.
Love it. Cool. Well, let's jump in. All right. I'm going to share a little bit of my kind of personal journey with podcasting because Share Your Genius is heavily involved in that. I was leading a marketing team at a healthcare analytics platform previously prior to starting The Juice, which is now Audience Plus. We met. I think we had even talked about starting a podcast. And that business was really interesting because we sat on a huge data set of insurance claims data, health claims data, which leads to a lot of like really cool things you can do. We were in kind of the predictive space, so we could predict within an employer's population, you know, a subpopulation of their employees that were potentially at risk for diabetes or at risk for stroke or had comorbidities that could be treated more efficiently. So it was like we created really cool content. We had talked about starting a podcast and we ended up not doing it. You know, I think in those days, it was 2018, I was kind of maybe able to hide behind the excuse of like expensive, difficult to produce, time intensive, labor intensive. I, a bit ironically, never liked myself on video, never had the kind of confidence to put myself out there. Now, come full circle at The Juice when we started that, Brett McGrath, who led marketing for us, I think on day 8, he published our first podcast episode. And that really opened my eyes to like, okay, this doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be time intensive. It doesn't have to be labor intensive. And then even fast forward like 3 years now to where we're at, there is no excuse anymore for brands not to be investing in video and audio podcasting. You know, it's how people are consuming content. It's what the algorithms like that we're all attached to. It's become more cost effective. It's become easier, more flexible. I think there's even thanks to COVID, there's almost like an appreciation for like lo-fi video to a degree. And so now podcasting, audio and video is core to our content strategy. I'll stop my rambling, kind of my experience there. Rachel, does that kind of like mirror what you've seen happen in the space? You've obviously been in it even longer than that.
Well, I think that's accurate. I think there's a couple things, though, that's nuanced. One is from an investment perspective specifically, and I don't mean just like dollars, but I mean like resources and time and all of that. There's two types of content plays that you can bring to life when it comes to audio and video. One is like, yeah, you can launch a show, and that show can be as big of a budget or as light as a budget as you need it to be. But there's this other concept of launching a feed, and that's something that I think is a newer way of understanding how to leverage audio and video specifically for your brand and your content strategy. And what do I mean between a show versus a feed? A feed is kind of like the aggregate. It's the place that you can pull your digital content into one place that helps share your brand message consistently across all of the channels that you're leveraging that content for. And then there's this concept of like a show. And a show sort of has its own baked in premise. It might be designed specifically for a specific like thought leader within your organization or to really focus in on like one content pillar of your overarching content strategy. And so I like to work with our clients to help them understand like, how are you going to be leveraging your show? Or should it actually be designed as more of a feed that helps serve your overarching brand messaging? And really making sure that we're clear on what it is. And then the other piece of that is because the barrier to entry of launching a show or a feed is fairly low these days, there is more emphasis on the pre-production planning and strategy than there might have been previously. Because the thing that you're ultimately trying to do when you're creating content is to earn attention from the people that you want to be in front of. That doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands of people. It could be 430, like whatever it is. But you do want to make sure that the pre-production piece is intentional and designed accordingly. But I always like to say, like, outcome first, make sure we're designing with distribution in mind, and then make a distinction between whether you're launching a show or a feed, because the conversation with your stakeholder also would be different based on that.
Okay. I love that you stated outcome first. And I think that's always been maybe a hang up for video and audio content, maybe audio specifically for brands. What should be the outcome, or maybe what do you see most common? Should is probably, you know, very brand dependent, case by case. But I feel like the $1 million question for podcasting, how do you measure success with podcasting?
Yeah, so it really understanding the distinction between show versus feed is a way to actually start to put yourself in the right position to understand both the outcome and the ROI, if you will. But I would say like the common sort of outcomes people attach to this effort are like build brand awareness. Like, I want to use this as an opportunity for people to know more about us. And underneath brand awareness, there's things like, I want to use this show to fuel my content engine. This is our always on content. And then you're basically leaning into that as you're always on content and then maximizing your network to amplify it. So you're maximizing your network to share the content, to be guests on the content, to sort of give that buzz that's going to help build your brand. That's the most common thing. We just help make sure that our clients understand like how to squeeze the juice out of that effort. And then the other thing is drive demand. Like, how do I use this as an opportunity to drive demand? Obviously, brand drives demand, but you can leverage your show as an opportunity to engage with target accounts in a way that's like super meaningfully. You can also leverage your show to create a really unique brand experience so that when you are engaging with your target list, you're doing special things that help them understand what it would feel like to be a partner to you. And also, like, you can leverage your show to help them experience your product and thinking outside the box of like what that could look like and be like. So those are the ways I think about it. And then the other one is grow an audience. Like, how can I use this to grow an audience? That is typically the best outcome if you already have an audience. So a podcast is not inherently an audience builder, but if you already have an audience, it is an opportunity to then grow that.
I love a few things that you mentioned there, and I'm again going to lean on our personal experience here. And this is not like a planned pitch, but you mentioned like experiencing product, kind of driving demand. That's what we're doing at Audience Plus with our own show. And so I've shared with a few other folks, we're always recommending Share Your Genius, but I've said out loud, and maybe this is a crazy thing to say out loud, like, I don't care about the downloads or the views or the listens of the show. Now, caveat, I say that as I'm refreshing my other monitor, a video that we posted less than half hour ago has over 1,000 views now. And I keep refreshing that because there is some endorphins being released there that feels pretty good. But we don't do it for like the big view numbers. We do it to help service our customers, help talk to prospects. It's a forcing function for conversations with prospects, with customers, broadly the market that otherwise, you know, would be lower on my priority list and I just wouldn't prioritize. And then we also use our own platform to distribute the show, which then we get to show off to those prospects and customers. Like, if nobody ever listens to this, just that value of the conversation and then getting to use product is worth its weight in gold. We absolutely love it. And I think that's, like you're saying, outcome first. That's our outcome. And, you know, anything that comes alongside of those goals is really just gravy as far as the show goes for us.
So leaning into that for just a second of like, you know, you're in a position to say, I mean, you are the decision maker of your company, obviously, but like people who are listening sometimes often have to like build the case. I mean, you have to build a business case too, but like, how do I build the case of saying yes to this investment? And again, like investment is obviously dollars, but investment is time. Like that is, that's a big piece of the conversation around this. But to me, there's two ways of evaluating. There is metrics of success and there are metrics of performance. Downloads are a metric of performance, not a metric of success. And now if you came to me and said, I want to monetize my show and build a media brand, then downloads are a metric of success. That is different. But when we're talking primarily B2B, using this as a brand lift effort, really it's metrics of performance versus metrics of success. And metrics of success come from the brand. Like what are the key things that you're looking at that you're accountable to that you need to grow and drive over time? It's not going to be how many people are listening to your show. That's just a metric of performance of, are we reaching our right audience? Is our right audience pressing play? And are they, is that audience growing over time? On the same vein of thought there, when you think about metrics of performance for your show, for your podcast, for your content, it's how much of an episode or how much of this are people actually engaging with? How long are they spending time with your brand? Because a lot of times when we tell the story of a success for our clients, part of that success is like, what other content are you getting this much time spent with your audience? Most of the time, like, no, this is the only thing that we get this much time spent with brand. And so that those are some of the ways that we think about the metrics and whether or not this thing is actually working or not.
I am going to steal metrics of success versus metrics of performance. It's you talked about it for the podcasting, but that's really like content in general. Like we have this conversation with our customers all the time. You know, they'll buy because the metrics of success are brand awareness, views, impressions. And when it's time to renew, it's metrics of performance, like pipeline created, leads generated. And like, I'm going to steal that because I think we can actually do a better job up front of delineating between what does success look like? What does performance look like here? We can maybe hit both or we can really focus on one or the other. But I love how you've articulated those differences there.
The thing that I've learned is that the best way to explain success is by asking the right questions. Yeah. And so when we're evaluating the channel success of a podcast, whether it's a show or a feed or whatever, we're really asking ourselves three questions. Are we growing? Is it going up and to the right? Because if it's not growing, it doesn't necessarily mean this is a failure. It just means there's an opportunity to do something differently or look at things differently, right? The second question we ask ourselves is, how is our content performing? And how is our content performing is kind of a two-headed question because it's going to help us answer editorially, how much of an episode are people consuming or not? And then the other thing is like topically or guest, did an episode perform really well or an episode, like we had one client who has had fairly well-known, like quote unquote famous people on their show. And those episodes actually don't perform as good oftentimes as those that are more topical. You know what I mean? So it's like using the data to help you understand what levers to pull. Then the last question we always ask is like, is our audience taking the intended action? And if the intended action is like a subscriber or a follower, then yeah, we want to see those numbers going up and to the right. But maybe the intended action is opting into a newsletter or attending a webinar or whatever. And so it's like making sure that you're setting the stage of understanding like, how are we evaluating this channel? And then how are we understanding like the content performance so that we can make better decisions, which maybe one day you consider cutting, but you can't really even evaluate things until you've asked the right questions.
That's, again, true of all content. We find a high degree of correlation between the best marketers we work with, the best content marketers, creators that we work with. A lot of times they're former journalists. And I think it's exactly what they're asking better questions and telling better stories than they are doing marketing, right? And I think there's something to that. So you mentioned outcomes-based. We kind of reverse engineered that into show versus feed. You mentioned building a business case. So what advice do you have for somebody who's maybe listening to this and saying, I really think my brand should be doing a podcast or could be doing a really cool show or feed of content, like, but maybe they're needing to build that business case for the executive team or the investment from the CFO. What's like the piece of advice that you'd have for that audience?
So it might be counterintuitive, but for those that are questioning whether or not to do it and they need to build the business case, there's a piece of me that's like, just do it. Just launch the show. But if you're unsure because you're not clear on X, Y, or Z, then I would say don't start with a show. Because ultimately, what you're looking to do when you are leaning into this channel, from my view, it's all the gold that comes from it. And so you can get that gold. You can take that same strategy, but not launch a show. So specifically what I mean by that is like, we're in a digital studio right now. You can use a digital studio for a ton of different content creation. A lot of times what we do with our clients is we create a 90-minute session where we ask a lot of really good questions from key thought leaders from the organization. And then we turn that stuff into a whole bunch of different multimedia content. You know, video shorts are performing well on YouTube. And this week, they're not performing that well on LinkedIn. But what is performing really well on LinkedIn is kind of the carousel, but image-based carousel. So you can take an interview like Jonathan and I are having, and we can turn that into 3 to 4 to 5 slides of just our conversation back and forth with captions. And it's because we had a really good conversation that we can then leverage into this other piece of media. So that's what I would caution you with. Like, I'm very bullish that you should launch a podcast because that's your always on content. However, if you are not ready to invest in that motion, you should be investing in video and audio content, but you can do it in batches and you can do it in a way that feels more sustainable and much more approachable if you're still building your use case.
So we're about to go deep here. So I actually presented on to the American Marketing Association chapter here in Indianapolis. Yeah, super casual. They invited me to present on AI. And I like told them, I was like, I'm not an AI expert. Like, but they're like, no, come in. Neither here nor there, but it was good. I actually showed up and there wasn't a screen or any type of projector. So we ended up with printouts of paper that were not color. It was wild. But one of the things I presented, I've had a few people follow up to me about it, was our own content strategy and how the atomization that you mentioned, which is the word I always use for like taking that 90-minute recording and turning it into other assets. I tell folks all the time, thanks to your team, you know, all I do is I hit record twice a week on average. Record for 30-ish minutes. And then I actually mapped it out in a slide. We're getting about 24 pieces of content from those two recordings on a weekly basis that becomes our social strategy, our video strategy. Like, it's such a good forcing function to like fuel everything else in your marketing strategy. And I think you're right. If you are just getting, if you're trying to build a case, like just get started, like tiptoe in. There's ways now, there's tools now that'll help you do that. There's teams now that'll help you do that. Like, just get started and see what's possible. And I trust they'll build momentum from there. So yeah, please.
Well, I was gonna say, leaning into AI for just half a second longer. Like,
well, we went 15 minutes without talking about AI, which I think is a new record.
If you're in marketing today, if you don't talk about AI, like, get out of here. But I will say, to talk about AI for 1 second, like, the core differentiator between you and your competitors today, at the end of the day, it is you. It is you. It is like the personality. It is the people. It is like the humanness of your company that cannot be replicated, because everyone is unique. Like, we were literally made that way, right? Like, that is what it is. Yeah. In the age of AI, the only differentiator is how you get your people to scale. How do you get that message to market to scale? And the only way to do that is by capturing the human, which is video and audio in conversation and in connection. And so that's why I'm like, if you're not ready to do a show, you do need to be ready for kind of people first content, which is video and audio. And you can do it in a very smart way, both in terms of your time, your attention, and your planning, so that you can get all of that goodness from your people.
So Tim Rath, who was just on an episode we just released, I asked him the question I'm getting ready to ask you, which is, what's an unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to B2B marketing? But he just said point blank, he's like, AI is not the future. And what he was saying is basically like, zig when everyone else is zagging, right? Like, everyone's creating, you know, content by the pound, to put it pretty crass. You know, like, they're dropping their arbitrary prompt. Maybe they've got a little bit of guidance into prompt building, but they're dropping their prompt and whatever GPT they're using, they're generating content faster, more efficiently than ever before. But then there's this opportunity for the brands that want to invest in their humans, in their storytelling, to really stand out. And I can think of 5 or 6 examples of those off the top of my head that are doing that. And it does like genuinely stand out right now. And I think video, audio content, storytelling, you know, there's even, you know, you're seeing like the AI avatars and people coming to life with that. But what they can't replicate is the conversation and the perspective. And I don't know that that'll ever be, you know, able to be replicated by AI. I think it's so unique. And that's why I think like brands should absolutely be investing in this channel right now.
Well, and the thing about AI, just to close the loop on that quickly, is that the AI, the danger of AI is that if you have inexperienced people reading the content that AI is creating, the danger of it is that AI makes things up And then the other danger of it is like it creates things, like it makes it up, and the danger of it not being true is there. And so if you don't have a human sort of being the source of that, and then the human sandwich of like reviewing that, that has experience on that topic or audience or whatever, the danger is you bastardize your brand. And all of a sudden you've put a whole bunch of content out there that's not in line at all with your messaging or your experience or anything or your expertise. And so I think Tim is right of like AI is not the future. AI is an accelerator to scale something that you already know and understand. And that's the way I kind of see it.
Too many people are using AI to scale bad marketing. Like,
yes. And they're ruining their brand. Like, they're ruining their brand. And it's like, stop doing that. Like the amount of people that ask to connect with me and then I'm like, oh, they look cool. I'm going to do that. And then immediately send me a pitch. I'm like, we're immediately not connected now. And now I hate your brand.
People see through it. People are smarter than that. A quick real world example. We do use AI for some prospecting, but there's a human in the loop and we're customizing each message. Kate, our head of revenues, posted about this on LinkedIn. We've caught this solution, which does a great job, by the way. It references customer stories that we have.
Yeah.
And it's one of the messages it keeps kind of hallucinating and producing is that how we helped one of our customers grow from 5 million to 100 million in revenue.
Whew.
This nobody like should believe that.
Yeah.
If anybody's telling you they're solely responsible for 20x growth for one of their customers, I'd run. But also that business is not even a $5 million business. And so I know that business pretty well. I keep screenshotting it and sending it to them. Like, congratulations on all your growth. But it's just like, you have to have that human in the loop. It's crazy. So yeah. All right, Rachel, we always end these conversations by asking, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
So the unpopular opinion, and then I get to give all the caveats afterwards, is that when it comes to LinkedIn, having no plan is better than having a plan.
Tell me more.
Yeah. Why I say that is because I think that we've done this thing where we're starting to over-engineer and we're losing
marketers would never do that.
Never. But we're losing the authenticity of letting people just post what they're thinking and lean into their original ideas and thoughts, or use LinkedIn as a helpful tool to help you kind of formulate your own opinion about things instead of all of this shooting content or playbooks or here's the algorithm and here's how to play the game. In my opinion, it's like the only plan for LinkedIn is to post consistently and authentically. And that might mean don't have a plan, just do it. I mean, even my content sometimes is makes no sense and doesn't align to any content pillar. But I mean, I've taken the time to get clear on my point of view. I've taken the time to kind of understand what types of vibes I'm in here for, but I don't have a cheat sheet or a playbook that I'm running up against.
I love that. I've had that experience as well, where it's like, oh, this post is awesome. Like, we've got data points. We've got clear question. We've got, just the right amount of emojis, not too many, but just enough.
No long dash.
I'm like, this one's popping off. And then I post it. It's 46 impressions, right? And then in the afternoon, I'll just have some stupid thought.
Yes.
It's two sentences and I'll post that. And it's 4,000 impressions, right? And here, just there's no strategy there. It is just, but I think you're right about the consistency. Consistency matters. I think also the vibe does matter.
Vibe.
Like that personal brand vibe. Like, I have found myself more often on LinkedIn. I take my work very seriously. I don't take myself very seriously, which is a separate episode maybe sometime with a therapist. But
why is that? Yeah.
Yeah. I found myself in the comments being a little bit more sarcastic or just a little bit more fun, right?
It's who you are.
I think LinkedIn could use some of that. So that I found myself just pretty consistently jumping into people's comments and trying to make them smile. And that's kind of what.
That I think though, Jonathan, is the magic of embracing who you are as a human being and just letting that person show up online and and being consistent with I'm going to engage in this channel because that's where my community is, but I'm not going to be too rigid in my execution of it because that's not who I am. And I think that's the piece that makes things special. And I think it's challenging for content marketers or marketers who are in charge of brand and helping their people do that. And so my invitation to you is just how do you encourage your people to just be themselves more? And how can you be a facilitator of that so that they can create the content and you can just be really that curator and facilitator?
So good. Such a good kind of encouragement to end this conversation on. Rachel, if people want to learn more from you or about Share Your Genius, what's the best way to do that?
head on over to our friend that we just talked about, LinkedIn.
Exactly. Love it. We will get all of those links in the show notes. To all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining another episode. Rachel, thank you so much for being such a great partner, such a great podcast guest. The first of many to come, I hope. Until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.